Welcome to the MGO podcast. Since we couldn't do a hot take segment, here's mine. Watch the replay on the big screen. The whole building already saw what happened, so why are we still staring at Bo Borowski's butt?
Seth, you got a hole punch for me? Got a like one of those things? Because I got a ticket for you. Punched.
Good one, Brian.
Not like in a kerfuffle against Wisconsin way, and like a probably punched their ticket, right?
Yeah, I was gonna make some sort of analogy to, you know, Devontae Jones weaving his way through the myriad non-tall people who play for Ohio State to get to the bucket, but I think that works too. They're in, right? Like that, a loss to Indiana is not going to undo this up and down thing.
Well, yeah. Let's say that you're in the market for some sort of goods or services, and you have a ticket that needs punching. Well, you should talk to our sponsors. The MGO podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products. Check out ugpmichiganapparel.com or find our stuff at mgoblogstore.com. We also want to thank all of our associate sponsors: Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, Signal Wire, From the Cheap Seats with the Sklar Brothers Podcast, Team Fan Club, and Prentice 4M, which is where we usually are. I want to apologize to all of our associate sponsors that aren't Ann Arbor Elder Law, because when we go to another arena that has a corporate name and I insert one of our sponsors, Ann Arbor Elder Law is always the funniest one, so I use it more.
I mean, the other ones all tell me about it. I was just, I'm actually doing my life insurance right now with Phil Klein, and like, they were all excited that like, he got a phone call from someone like, Phil Klein, did you buy a stadium?
But yeah, the Ann Arbor Elder Law Arena in Columbus, Ohio is just too funny to pass up. Anyway, speaking of Columbus, Ohio, Michigan goes into Ohio State, wins 75-69, despite being down 7 points at halftime, without Hunter Dickinson in the bar none grittiest performance of the year. And I think that my headliner and everybody's headliner is, of course, Devontae Jones. 21 points on 16 shooting possessions, 9 assists, 2 turnovers. And I think this is really important, 2 steals.
Yeah.
So Michigan comes into this game with one of the worst turnover rates generating defenses in the country. They come up with 11 steals. That is 17% of Ohio State possessions. Almost 1 in 5 Ohio State possessions ended with a transition opportunity for Michigan at the other end. And it wasn't just Devontae Jones. Brooks came up with 3. Caleb Houston came up with 2. Mm-hmm. You have Johns, Diabate, Bufkins, Collins. You have 7 different guys register steals, and some of these are off doubles. Some of these are just Michigan getting handsy on the perimeter.
I think you have Faulds one, though. I swear I saw one from Faulds.
Well,
that was the thing. In my notes, when I went over them, I gave Jones credit for 4 of them, because there were 2 turnovers that he created by kind of like knocking it away, and then somebody else picked it up. And I think that was one of Faulds as well. So like the guy who knocked it away, and that's what they were doing. They were doubling down. After getting the ball to somebody like, you know, Eugene Brown or whatever, some of the other guys that are not as great at protecting the ball, getting out of the hands of like Malachi Branham, who is pretty good with the ball in his hands, and that's how they were generating those turnovers. So that was like the defensive strategy to do this.
Yeah, and so that was, I think, extremely necessary in the absence of Hunter Dickinson, and I think, you know, if you have guys like this, like Devontae Jones had a lot of steals at Coastal Carolina. Frankie Collins is a guy who I think can generate some stuff for you. Like, I think that might be something they want to look into a little bit more, because it was really successful here. And I think that's the difference in the game, really. So this was a shot volume win for Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
They have 6 more offensive rebounds than Ohio State. They have 7 fewer turnovers. I mean, they only shoot 43% from 2 versus 54% for Ohio State, but they still win this game because they get up 19 more attempts from 2 than OSU did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, there were a lot of those sort of putbacks that were, you know, good attempts that Michigan missed at the rim, but even if you count that against it, it was a... I mean, it was such a Devontae Jones game. Like, the way they played, that was Devontae Jones' game at Coastal Carolina. It was the steals and the, I mean, you know, lots of assists and breaking down and then getting the ball outside. Like, that was his game. It's really weird to they lose Hunter and all of a sudden, like, another player's DNA kind of takes over the team.
Yeah, and, I mean, this is especially impressive for Devontae Jones because he's getting to the rim and finishing pretty well in a game where they essentially turned fouls off for Ohio State in ways that, like, you know, Diabate gets his third foul on a perimeter touch foul, and you're like, you know, you're beside yourself because it looks like Ohio State has committed a number of fouls near the rim, starting on the first possession of the game, and you're like, okay, I guess this is the way it's going to be called, and I don't think that's an asset for Michigan because Michigan's guys are getting to the rim and having problems at the rim, and Ohio State's guys are usually settling for contested jumpers. So you don't want, you would like a tighter whistle when you're the team that's getting to the rim. But the combination of what happened in the first half and then Diabate picking up a couple of extremely cheap, you know, nickel dime fouls is it's tough to take, especially when I think EJ Liddell play something like 72 minutes against Michigan this year and commit zero fouls. Like he picked up probably one of the worst block charges I've seen all year.
Yeah.
Where you have a completely set Terrence Williams outside the circle who gets plowed in the chest by Liddell, and it's an and one instead of a charge. And you're just like, all right, well, I guess this is how it's going to go. So not only do they not have Hunter Dickinson, not only is Caleb Houston in road mode, I guess is what we're going to call it, but they're going up against an extremely adverse whistle for what they want to do with some absolutely absurd non-calls, and they still pull this game out. So that's extremely gratifying. Like, this was, you know, Matt D talks about how Devontae Jones is like the tough guy on the team, and this felt like a tough guy kind of win.
It was, and then like it works so well with like the narrative of this year, because like we've had games where we lost because Caleb Houston couldn't make a shot. Caleb Houston goes 0 for 10, right? We've had games we lost this year when Hunter Dickinson got sick. We had that Rutgers, Illinois period, and that was understandable too. Like, okay, Hunter Dickinson's out. Michigan can't play their game. And then we've had games, particularly against Ohio State, where the officiating just kind of swung things so weirdly that like Michigan can't even operate their offense or have the right guys on the court because they're just not getting any calls. And those are good excuses, but excuses don't really work, and there's really no more room for those excuses in their tournament resume. And for Michigan to win despite that, to like pull themselves out of there and, you know, win on the road versus a tournament team to end the season, it defies the narrative that we've been saying about the team and puts them back into discussion of these are the guys that you want in the tournament. These are the guys that you want to see go up against anybody, because if things are not going your way and you can still win, that makes you a very dangerous team.
Yeah, and you have this sort of worst case play from both Caleb Houston and Brandon Johns. He gets 24 minutes and also goes 0 of 5 from the floor. He did get a couple of free throws. But, and there's like, Johns is like not able to catch the ball in ways that are just depressing to see. So you get no production from two of your starters, and you're still able to pull this out in part because Terrence Williamson comes off the bench and puts up 17 in 25 minutes. Huh. He's, I think his last three games, he's like 6 of 8 from three. So he's now leading the team with 40% 3-point shooting, which is absolutely massive for a team that just needs someone to chip in who's not one of the big three, especially when one of the big three does not play in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been hard on Johns all year, but like his two missed twos were both at the rim. He was fouled on both of them. He got shots on one of them, and the other one was just an absurd non-call. And then, like, you know, the other two were three-pointers, and you can go 0-2 from three, and it's not that big of a deal. But yeah, Williams, you know, he also hit that shot at the end of the first half after Michigan went down 9, and that kind of, you know, you're not going... It just, like I said, this is just a narrative game, because, like, you're not going into halftime just getting, you know, dominated in the last all these trips and
by Joey Brunk.
Yeah, by Joey Brunk, who, like, oh my God, those, that was another thing. Like, sometimes we lose games because some, they're taking twos and they're, they go off the rim and roll around and then go in, and it's like that. Brunk was making those in the first half, and I'm like, come on, come on. Even that's going against us.
Well, Brunk's a weird player because he was, so he didn't play. I know so much about Joey Brunk. he barely played his freshman year at Butler. His second year at Butler, he plays half their minutes. He shoots 62% from the floor, and you've seen Joey Brunk play. That's not like a coincidence. He actually has a lot of back to the basket low post game, but he decides to transfer. He goes to Indiana, where he's just kind of okay. And then he's absolutely buried on the bench at Ohio State after a year off. And I know Joey Brunk isn't any great shakes, but when Michigan gets down to like spare parts, they don't have Joey Brunk. They have Jerron Fultz. So, like,
sure.
It's,
and, I mean, and this, yeah, I agree. And like, he, that was, it's a good shot. I just want to say that. Like, when he takes that hook shot, he actually puts like a lot of spin on it, so it's supposed to go off the rim that way. I didn't mean to, you know.
Yeah, no, he's, I mean, he's what, their fourth string center or something, their third string center. So like, mm-hmm. Michigan, I don't even know if that's Jerron Fultz for Michigan. That might be like Will Shetter. Their version of Will Shetter is Joey Brunk. So that's a weird little bit of depth to have. I mean, from Michigan's perspective on the defensive end, what they were able to do is they were able to prevent Liddell and Branham from absolutely demolishing them. Like, they both did okay, but you know, 26% usage and 28% usage, and then you're got guys like Eugene Brown and, you know, Jamari Wheeler. Like, Jamari Wheeler goes 3 of 4 from three in this game, and you're just like, okay, like, yes, he's gonna do that. He's yep. actually shooting pretty well from three this year, which is interesting because he's just a non-entity, except when Michigan goes under a screen and Wheeler's like, all right, I'll pull up this time and nail it. I was like,
Yeah, he did take one from the, he took a heat check in this game. Unfortunately, he missed that one.
Yeah, Jamari Wheeler heat check. Here we come. Let's go.
But okay, yeah, so add that to the list. You know, we've had games where Michigan's lost because the other team just gets super hot from three. You know, they ended up shooting 41% from, and that was with a bunch of threes late to get back. But like, you know, they,
yeah, Michigan hits 38%. So the lesson here is like, if Michigan has like 3-point parity with a team, they're a pretty good team. Mm-hmm. Like, this just hasn't happened, right? It's either Michigan shoots 68% and blows Purdue out of the water, or they shoot 12% and they get annihilated. There's really been no in between where Michigan's like, okay, we shot a pretty good percentage, but it wasn't anything out of this world except for a couple games lately, and they've won those games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of terrifying going into tournament season and you're like, okay, if the first three goes down, we're going to win by 20. But if it doesn't, we're going to lose by 20.
I thought the first three did go down, but then it turned out Diabate's foot was on the line. So we lost a Diabate three again. I think that's the fourth this year.
I was not happy with that shot for a lot of reasons, but the main one was like, I mean, your foot's on the line, bro. Like, but
yeah,
overall, you got to give a lot of guys on this team a lot of credit for pulling out a gutty win. I don't think anybody thought going in the locker room down seven that Michigan's going to do anything. And then they come out, and in the next 10 minutes, they outscore Ohio State 26-7. Mm-hmm. That was not expected. So I have a lot of guys chip in. Just, I mean, we should talk about Frankie Collins got 5 minutes in the first half of this game when Devontae Jones picked up a quick foul, a second foul. And the lineup he's out there with is like, how is this lineup going to score at all?
Yeah.
And Frankie's answer was like, I'm just going to drive to the rim and score layups that are difficult and contested. And then, so he goes to his left twice, and then he steps through, has a euro on the last one, gets the rim again, and then misses a bunny. Hmm. So he goes 2 or 3 from two. And really he was, I mean, those were all at the rim, and you kind of expect that last one to go down. Also, he did not turn the ball over. So that was a really, I mean, it was a really important stretch.
Yeah.
For, he only had 5 minutes, but like, you could see like where it might be going. And then of course, Kobe Bufkin comes in and hits a dagger three that Michigan dearly needed late in this game. So mm-hmm. getting some hints of progress from these freshmen.
Yeah, speaking of progress from the freshman, you know, Houston, we talked about his shooting, but his defense was amazing That was like one of the most underrated parts of this game, was that, you know, the way Michigan was attacking them was they would come and double down as soon as, like, you know, Zed Key or Joey Brunk got the ball and then try to steal it. And the reason that was able to work without, like, leaving Irons available for too many threes, I know he got eight out, he went 4 for 8, so, like, they did get hurt by that. But it was Houston having to do a lot of the coming down and doubling down and then racing back outside. And that was just hustle from him. And, like, to see how far he's come defensively from where he was early in the season, where he didn't even know where to go, where now he knows where to go and he's putting in the effort. He's not going to have the physicality for it, but he affected the game on defense.
Yeah, and one thing we should note is that Justin Arons is, like, the most extreme just-a-shooter possibly in the country, so closing out hard on him is easier, I think, than closing out on a guy who's, like, actually a triple threat. So, but just to be able to affect that a little bit is good, especially when his shot was obviously not with him. I mean, there were a couple possessions in this game where, you know, Matt D pointed this out to us, where it's just like, if Houston is shooting and he's on the move, he barely draws iron. Mm-hmm. And they run a Rip Hamilton curl for him at some point, and you're just like, I think that just bricked off the backboard, and I'm like, I mean, come on, like, sure, let's work on this in the off season. Right? Like, this is not offense that we want to be running right now. Ever since he pointed that out, whenever Houston shoots off the move, I'm like, oh God. And he hits like 25% maybe, if you're lucky. So hopefully they can pare that out of the offense and focus on some other stuff. All right, we're gonna take a break, come back, talk about Michigan's previous game, which was obviously a loss, because that's all they do, alternate wins and losses.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up, and you can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. And now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Under name, image, and likeness group licensing agreements, college athletes can now earn money. Still, the indirect consequence has many athletes chasing money, losing valuable study time for classes, practices, and games. As a group sponsor, you can offer a minimum of $100 in a one-time payment, or $20 or more per month on your credit card. Monthly payments by supporters, alumni, and season ticket holders of $20 or more will help athletes tremendously. Being a student athlete is not easy. It's hard. And until now, athletes were not allowed to work to make extra money while on a scholarship. On TeamFanClub.com, sponsors can make it easier for their favorite team or coach with a simple commitment to a group licensing agreement. Group licensing benefits all scholarship players, not just the starters. It provides fairness for all athletes who practice and train together for games. It provides security for players to stay at your school and not go into the transfer portal. Support student athletes today and sponsor a team at teamfanclub.com.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
I've got the rhythm and I can feel. Oh man, and I feel it coming waves. Oh man, until the morning we can't stand still.
Previous game, Iowa 82, Michigan 71. I mean, not a whole lot to say except Iowa went 58% from three. Jordan Bohannon was 5 of 7 with a lot of just unconscious Jordan Bohannon shots that didn't drop in the first game. He was 0 for in the first game. So he's just a very frustrating guy to play against because he takes a lot of shots that are like, okay, that's a bad shot. And then sometimes, despite doing that, he goes 5 of 7 from three. And you're like, oh, bad. And particularly bad early in this game because I think Keegan Murray hits like his first two, maybe three. Bohannon hits one. And just kind of out of the gate, they're super hot from three. It's 20-8. And Michigan outscores them by 1 point the rest of the way. So not that hard to like trace that back to just a really hot start for Iowa shooting. And then they're a pretty good team, so you can't claw that back.
Yeah, I mean, Iowa's their offense all year has been the same thing, that they try a couple of things, and once they don't have an open shot, they get the ball to Keegan Murray, and he can do so many different things. He can back you down, he can drive to the lane, or he could just take a contested three. And a lot of his shots this time were just, I think all four of his three-pointers were contested, you know, very contested. Like, there's just a guy standing in front of him, and he's like, okay.
Somewhat contested.
But he made all four of them. And like that was part of the early game too, is that like when Iowa didn't have anything else, like Michigan wins the defensive possession, they're down to 3 seconds or 6 seconds, they get the ball to Keegan Murray and he puts up a shot and it goes in.
Yeah, and then I mean Chris Murray comes off the bench and absolutely obliterates Michigan. Mm-hmm. So you have I'm confused. I mean, honestly, the only reason there's a McCaffrey in the starting lineup is nepotism, because if you look at Murray's season, like he's playing 40% of Iowa's minutes and he's shooting 56-40 from the floor with like meaningful block rates, meaningful OREB rates, and like a TO rate that's close to top 50. His usage is sky high too. Like, if I don't know if this is a ploy to keep this dude in college another year, but he's close to the same stratosphere as his brother. And like, if Iowa wants to do something in the postseason, they need to be playing both Murrays together like 30 minutes a game. Because that, I mean, he was 8-9 from two against Michigan. There weren't a whole lot of flukes in there either.
No, I mean, he was getting to the basket, and that I thought was a little bit more Michigan's defense. I mean, first of all, he's a pretty big guy, and Michigan kept on putting guards on him. So, I mean, he was driving on Eli Brooks.
Well, I mean, at some point, just run out of dudes, right? Because if you have both Murrays out there, like those guys are both 6'8", 225, and they both have NBA athleticism. And if you're lucky, you got one dude who can kind of check one of the Murrays. Mm-hmm. Michigan does. It's Musa Diabate. And then the other guy, it's just like, doesn't matter who you put on him. Like, you put Hunter on him, nah, it's not going to work. You put Houston on him, nah, it's not going to work either. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I cannot imagine that you've got Chris Murray has a top 100 O rating, and he has 25% usage when he's out there. There cannot be another player in the country who has that combination who's not playing at least 75% of his team's minutes. It's mind-boggling.
And then you notice the last name of the guy who's starting over him, and I get it. I mean, he played more minutes in this game, so like he's just not technically not starting, but he played 26 minutes in this game.
He did play 26 minutes in this game, and that's what he needs to be doing probably every night, if not more. Because, bringing in Connor McCaffrey, that's not going to move the needle like this dude. So I don't personally get what they're doing with the Murrays, but the other guy's almost as good as his brother.
Yeah. The other thing they need to do is change his number to 16, because it looks so much like 15 that you really wouldn't know which one you're guarding. Like, you start switching those guys around, but, like, you know, the 24
does it matter?
Are
the
easy
same
enough
dude.
To tell a difference.
We should mention that Diabate in this game goes 2 of 9 from 3, despite having 5 offensive rebounds. And
or for 2, from 2.
That's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
So the flip in this game is not just the 3-point shooting, but the fact that in the first game, Diabate was like 12 of 14 from the floor. In this game, he was emphatically not that.
Yeah, and you know, Matt D was pointing out in our Slack that he's kind of the anti-Houston, because his numbers on the road are fantastic, and then he gets at home, and you know he goes down to under 8 points per game, 5 rebounds a game. Like, when he's on the road, it's 11 points per game, 6 rebounds a game. Like, he just plays more minutes, too. Like, maybe he needs the road people to... Maybe there's more French speakers. I have no idea why is he better on the road than in Ann Arbor. But that's been part of the up and down scenario too. Is that his games have been very up and down. And when he's got a good night, Michigan seems to do well. And when he kind of takes an off night, the defense falls apart and we can't score. And there's not enough spacing. Like, that's kind of the explanation that I have for the up and down nature of Michigan's second half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got very spoiled. This is going to be our next segment, I guess, but we got very spoiled with Hunter Dickinson coming in and immediately being a second team All-American.
Right.
And you're like, he's a top 50 player. Now we got a couple of top 10 players. They'll be better than Hunter Dickinson. Not so fast. Why don't we do that? We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and we're going to sort of look holistically at the season and what expectations we had that maybe were not the best.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next 5-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high-quality and low-latency communication functionality, for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute. They will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
This is Matt Demarest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGo Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
I'm calling.
Yeah, maybe I'm selfish.
I want you to myself, I can't help it.
All my.
Yeah, maybe I'm selfish.
All my ladies and I can't.
Maybe I'm selfish.
You,
I want you to myself, I can't help it.
With
yeah.
No one
yeah.
But me.
Yeah.
To my thick chicks down in Texas, all the way to New Orleans where the girls cook catfish, and in LA every chick's an actress, Hollywood status with the shaded glasses, to Detroit, yeah, the place that I rest, where the ladies got asses and la-la sex, and Hot Atlanta, y'all, is one of the best, where they speak Southern slang and smoke license. And New York women are way too fresh. Too much on your mind, let me ease that stress. I wish you all were mine, it's so selfish. Maybe I'm feeling myself too much.
All right, so the regular season is over. We believe Michigan has punched its ticket to the NCAA tournament, but it spent the whole year as a bubble team, and they were ranked in the top five going into the season. They were the preseason favorite in the Big Ten. They ended up 11-9, so disappointing year. And we're trying to figure out exactly why that is. So one thing that jumps out to me is that Michigan had the third toughest schedule in America.
Mm-hmm.
So this looks different, I think, if Michigan doesn't get almost the hardest possible Big Ten schedule. So the only team in the top seven in the Big Ten that they played once was Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And the only team in the bottom six they played twice was Nebraska. So you're one game away from literally the hardest Big Ten schedule. You know, you can flip a couple of these games around, and it's not too hard to envision Michigan being 13-7 in conference. And then nobody is doubting the fact that they have a bid locked up, despite the fact that the resume is probably worse, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
If they don't go to Purdue and instead they go to like Northwestern, their record is better. People are projecting them in the tournament more, but that didn't actually improve who they are, which is why you see Michigan at 31 in KenPom and Big Ten champion Wisconsin is at 30.
Right. Although Wisconsin got that Nebraska game at the end. They've got the easiest schedule of the year in the Big Ten, and that was supposed to be the easiest gimme of all, and lo and behold, Illinois gets a share of the championship at the end. Michigan also had to play Wisconsin on the road, so you mentioned the one team that only played once, it was a road game too.
Well, and then if you look at their non-conference schedule, early in the year people were like, maybe Seton Hall's pretty good. Well, Seton Hall's 35th in KenPom. Mm-hmm. They're 11-8 in Big East play. They're probably headed to the tournament themselves. And people were like, maybe Arizona's pretty good. Arizona is the number two team in KenPom. They're headed for a one seed. Arizona was really good. North Carolina, bubble team, but better than people expected earlier in the year. They're up to 32nd in KenPom. The San Diego State win, that team is top 25 in KenPom too. So you have a couple of bad losses. You have the home game against Minnesota. You have the road game against UCF. And so I think part number two is that Devontae Jones needed some time to get adjusted to the level of play. Mm-hmm. So, you know, his Big Ten stats are great. He's got a 31 assist rate, which is top 10 in the conference. His TO rate's 17, which isn't great, but it's definitely acceptable for a pretty high usage point guard. Shooting 53% from two. The only blemish is the fact he hasn't been able to shoot in Big Ten play from three. But early in the year, we had the banana peel on. There was that game against San Diego State where Frankie came in and had some good minutes, and everybody was like, well, maybe we should make a swap at point guard here. Mm-hmm. That turned out to be a bad take.
and we've got to get used to this, especially if we keep on bringing in transfer point guards to do this, because we went through the whole thing last year with Smith. We're like, you know, beginning of the year, oh god, this guy's got so many turnovers. And by the end of the year, it's like, oh, I really don't want to lose this guy. Maybe we can convince him to come back for a sixth year. And they're kind of, you know, it's not even a hot take anymore. You missed the hot take segment last week, but my hot take was that Devontae Jones is better than Mike Smith, and the Sklars were like, that's not a hot take. That's just true.
Yeah, I don't think that's a hot take either.
Yeah.
One thing that we talked about on TK this week is that Michigan has four different guys who are in some version of will they stay or will they go? And Devontae Jones is one of them. Mm-hmm. And I think that if he doesn't come back, that's going to be a big black mark about Michigan's NIL capabilities, because Devontae Jones could be really important for a very good basketball team next year. And, or he could be playing overseas, or he could be playing in the G League. And I want Michigan to be financially compelling to a guy like Devontae Jones, because there's better for college basketball if he stays, and it's definitely better for Michigan. But back to the conversation we were actually having. Mm-hmm. The other two things that jump out as major reasons that Michigan disappointed was that, as mentioned in the previous segment, we didn't get the Hunter Dickinson instant star freshman.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Frankie came in. He has a 79-0 rating. I love Frankie. I think Frankie's going to be good. But I don't think we heard that he couldn't shoot. And I think we believe that.
True.
I don't know if we anticipated he would shoot 45% from the line or 13% from three.
Like, there's guys who are 50% of his shots hit the rim. I mean, we have the kid.
Right.
It was
there's like can't shoot, and then there's like, oh no.
Right.
And Frankie was oh no. So we didn't really take that into account. Caleb Houston came in, and we've talked about his home versus road splits, but yeah, he has a 105-0 rating on 17% of Michigan's shots. And that is so far below even, I think, reasonable expectations. So, you know, I was like, okay, worst case, he's freshman Zach Irvin. And Zach Irvin is a freshman, took 26% of Michigan's shots when he was on the floor and hit 43% from three. Mm-hmm. That's all he did. He was just a shooter, but he came in and he was clearly a plus shooter from the drop. And I mean, Houston got up to 37% by the end of the regular season here, but for a guy who was touted as a top 10 pick, for him to really only be able to do one thing, and that's catch and shoot, is way off expectations. And we saw flashes from him here and there, especially kind of late in the season, where he'd like put the ball on the deck and he'd get to the rim, and then he'd be 6'8" with long arms. And you're like, oh, that's a really easy finish for him. You can see where this could be going. But particularly given the fact that he came in as one of the worst defensive players on the roster, did improve a great deal over the course of the season. But when you think top 10 national player, you don't think, okay, this guy is going to be sort of a peripheral guy who's not really driving a whole lot of play and is just meh in terms of efficiency.
Yeah, he was supposed to be the wing on this team. And number one, he doesn't have the athleticism to play the wing. He's really a forward. Number two, he took a long time to ken the defense, which we probably could have foreseen better. Like, freshman coming in, it takes a while to learn defense. I understand that part. His size and physicality was supposed to allow him to be a jump shooter, a guy who could just, you know, replace Shaundi Brown as far as, like, that role in the offense.
Right, where someone's closing out on you, but it doesn't really matter.
Right.
So, we did not get that from Houston. Houston was excellent when he was given an unguarded look and very subpar when he was given a look that Synergy considered guarded.
Yeah, and that was a big issue because that turns him into just a shooter, right? And we have this kind of designation on the charts of, like, just a shooter or not just a shooter. But there's kind of a guy in between that who is a not just a shooter who should be. And
who should just be a shooter.
Should just be a shooter, right. Right.
Not and, just a shooter, but should be.
Right, right. And I don't have room in the chart to keep on adding these things. Like, maybe it could be like a, you know, the bullseye holding a banana peel or something. But, like, that is what he was for most of the year. And then his defense was also, you know, it started kind of atrocious, and then it got to, you know, probably decent and then even good against Ohio State. But, like, that transition was a cost. Then you add all the other pieces, too, and, like, you know, he's fallen out of the draft board. Like, no one even thinks he's probably the most likely of all the question marks to come back, because
that's what we've heard. Yeah, I don't think that. I mean, he has obviously some NBA market, but not in his current state. Yeah. And I think you got to go back to his high school situation to suss out what happened here, because he was on, as a junior, he was on that ridiculous Montverde team that had, like, four other lottery picks.
Mm-hmm.
So all he had to do is sit there and knock down wide open jumpers, which he did at Michigan.
Yeah.
But he was not ready to get contested. He was not ready to do virtually anything else. And so then I think he probably had some confidence issues and went through some pretty tough stretches. He had a miserable game against Ohio State just recently. And so he came in, and if you're re-ranking this class, I mean, he's probably around 50th, but that's it. So you didn't get what you were expecting out of Houston. Diabate is a more interesting case because, like, you know, offensively, I think he may have exceeded expectations because he had that little short hook. He was not just a guy who's going to get some offensive rebounds and dunk, and he is an excellent finisher. But I think where he came in below expectations was on defense.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at this guy who's like 6'11", he's got pterodactyl arms, he's super athletic. His block rate is 3.2. That is 345th in the nation. And we were comparing him to Jaren Jackson coming in. Jaren Jackson had a double-digit block rate as a freshman. I remember Michigan played Jaren Jackson the first time, and he came from out of nowhere to block a shot. And I was like, oh, God, we're going to lose this by 30 points. And they won that game. But I was just the presence of Jaren Jackson in that same spot as a four, right? He was playing next to, like, Knicks and whoever their other big guy was. So he was a help side blocker. And the kind of thing we saw from Diabate at the end of that Ohio State game where he comes over and he blocks Brunk when you're like, okay, that's over.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I expected we were going to get all year. We did not. We got occasional flashes from Diabate, and the ability to switch onto guards and not get burned did not materialize. He's still like a ball of potential on defense. You can see why, but he wasn't there. And so that hypothetical, like, lockdown aspect of having Diabate out there with Dickinson never really materialized because he was only a promising defender and not actually a locked in plus guy.
And he's the guy who, if he would come back, has the most potential to blow up. And I think a lot of his defensive problems this year, where he just didn't know what he was doing, so he couldn't really play with aggressiveness. And then he got a couple blocks during the season. I remember one against Arizona State. It was like, Arizona, where I was like, dang, man, like, this is going to be awesome. And then he got a couple quick fouls on that. And I think that was part of it, too, that he would go for blocks and get fouls. And then Michigan needed him to stay on the court. So they kind of had to say, look, you can't rove around with your hands in there that much, because if you're gone, we don't have anyone to guard wings. And that was kind of Michigan's problem. That goes back to the Houston thing, too. They just did not have a wing this year. So who ends up doing all that guarding is Diabate. And that is a tough defensive role to put on a guy who's really kind of more of a center than anything else. And, like, we want him to be switchable, but, like, really, we just want him to be able to guard a three.
Right. And then I think the final personnel issue, just in terms of individual players kind of not coming into expectations. Brandon Johns, you know, we had this theory last year about big minutes Brandon Johns, and he goes into the tournament after Liberty is out. You know, here Brandon Johns' O ratings to finish the year: 202, 117, 125, 100, 108, 100. Nothing out of this world, but certainly acceptable. And so you got all these guys who are going out the door. You think Diabate is going to be your backup at the five. You think, okay, Brandon Johns, we just need you to be a functional Big Ten player. And it never happens. 12 minutes a game, 93 O rating. Doesn't really do much. Clearly turning down acceptable shots from three and then dribbling into no man's land. Just a guy who never progressed at all. You know, as a freshman, barely got on the court. Had a solid, somewhat promising sophomore year. Low usage, but efficient. Guy who played half of Michigan's minutes. And then his role dwindled and dwindled and dwindled. And just kind of one of the what ifs, I think, in recent Michigan history. If you could put Shondi Brown in Brandon Johns' body, you'd have a stew, right? Like, yeah. I mean, Shondi Brown in Shondi Brown's body is already pretty good, but you add 3 more inches and keep most of that athleticism, and you just have a guy who doesn't walk around in his head all the time, then you'd have a great player. But, you know, Johns just...
Eli Brooks, if you want to go there. I mean, like that...
Sure.
That would be a hell of a player, too. His confidence really kind of it came out in the offensive rebounding. Like that, obviously the turning down threes was like the most visible thing. But when he was really strong in place of Livers, he wasn't necessarily doing it the way the Livers was doing it. But he would get in there and be able to hop up, and you know he has that athleticism. He never lost that.
Yeah.
And he'd be able to tip it out or get those offensive rebounds and putbacks. And you know he had a double digit OREB rating for last year. And we thought that was going to travel. Like, that was a big part of his offensive game. And this year, I mean, it was down near point guard territory. It was, like, non-existent.
And then finally, I think the last thing that made this season far off of expectations is something that you brought up sort of in passing earlier in this segment, is that there are no real wings on this roster. So you have Bufkin, who's 6'4". He got about 10 minutes a game. The other guards are all 6'1". And then... the next guy on the list is Caleb Houston, who we mentioned. He's 6'8". You know, he's sort of kind of a wing, but I think really his best spot on a college roster is probably as a four. And so whenever you went up against one of those 6'5 guys, 6'6", 6'7", or even a 6'8 guy like Murray, who's got a ton of versatility, Michigan just had no one to check. And so Eli Brooks, who previously was on like the third or fourth best guy on the opposition team, because you always had Franz and Livers, often got tasked with checking a guy like Johnny Davis, and Johnny Davis just went on to the low block and then knew he could have a Dirk fadeaway with no contest at all.
Yeah.
And so we saw his defensive numbers, and these are the kind of synergy numbers that I do put a lot of faith in, because when you're talking about defending jumpers off the dribble, that is kind of a you and you personally thing. And Eli Brooks went from giving up 0.7 points per possession on that to like 1.4. I haven't checked recently. It's probably come down a little bit.
Yeah. But... and I mean, that also...
and that's not really Eli Brooks' fault. It's just the fact that Michigan was putting Eli Brooks into spots where he shouldn't have been. And that was because we had a pretty big miss on roster construction. And so when you look towards next year, find Shondi Brown in the portal. Doesn't matter from where. All right. So that's why I didn't go so great. But they still made the tournament. In all likelihood, extend that streak, you know, coming off a one seed. You got a lot of guys who are probably going to be back next year. You got another decent recruiting class. I think Michigan's going to bounce back from that.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion. UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGo Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome in, Alex Drain and Dave.
All right, I got to cut you off. What does Michigan have to do to get Muppets for hockey? They score 8 goals. They're winning almost 30 games. They're no
definitely, you can't get Muppets against Michigan State.
What about right? What if you win 30 games?
Win 30 games? I don't know.
We don't have like cumulative Muppets.
If they won the tournament, that would be Muppets.
You get one Muppets.
Well, for the Big
you
Ten tournament,
win the biggest thing possible, and you get Muppets.
No, the Big Ten tournament would be Muppets.
Frozen Four would be Muppets. Yeah.
Going to the Frozen Four would be Muppets.
Yeah, Frozen 4 would be Muppets. Winning the thing would be Muppets.
Double standards.
Well, we have a with the sanctions and everything. You know, we have to really we have a
no strategic
reserve
Muppets?
Of Muppets, so we gotta be careful.
All right, you can start now.
All right, so Michigan sweeps Michigan State last weekend in games that were. Well, one of them was sort of competitive, and the other one was very much not. I got to the Saturday one 5 minutes late because of babysitter issues, and they're already up 2-0. Things got worse from there. I don't know. I mean, is there anything to say about Michigan versus Michigan State hockey except fire whoever your coach is, hire someone who's not completely inept?
I mean, I don't think there's a lot of takeaways from the weekend from a series standpoint. But there were a couple things that happened that I thought were kind of a big deal. Like on Saturday, Johnny Beecher finally scored a goal and broke a stick in celebration. And then he scored another goal. And like, that's just a nice thing to have out of the way. And I would not be surprised if that line just exploded in the future because, I mean, Mackey and Duke have been both playing pretty well and scoring goals. And now you have Beecher. And I think that's probably just a huge relief. I mean, they were interviewing him after the game and he's just like, it's just really nice to have that done. And so when you're carrying that around, like those are the things. Morgan gets a goal. Kent Johnson finally scores a goal on another giveaway by a goalie. So like there are things like that, that while you wouldn't maybe want to theoretically play this series, a few things happen that might be emotionally or mentally nice going forward.
Yeah, and we did see sort of, I guess, an understandable chippiness from a Michigan State team that had been completely toilet for half the season. We had a couple of matching misconducts for each team in the late stages of the Friday game, and that was, oh, what, like 4-1 at that point. It wasn't even a ridiculous blowout like the Saturday game, but it's just, this is not a team that has any talent that Michigan's going up against. I mean, Michigan... The one thing I think you can say negatively from this weekend is that Michigan gave up way too many odd man rushes to a team that just can't play hockey.
Yeah, I mean, on Saturday they did, but it was like 8-0.
I like, know, there's some sloppiness.
I didn't even write anything about it because I was like, what am I going to say? This is a scrimmage. Like, hey, be perfect when you're up by so many goals. At that point, I'm just like, just end the game, get off the ice, don't get hurt. Let Beecher score a goal.
Do the cheer on the 8th goal. Did you notice that? Like, it never... they didn't want more goals. Yost was like, nope, enough goals.
Not enough digits.
It's worth noting, by the way, that in the last 3 seasons, Michigan has played 4 tournament games against MSU, and they have allowed 1 goal total in those 4 games.
I mean, what was the total goal? It was like 6-0 for Michigan, and the goals were like 35-10.
This year it was... I think they had, I wrote down, they had plus 25 goal differential against Michigan State in 6 games.
So one thing I'm curious about, like, what is slew footing? I'm never sure, like, they upgraded what was a tripping minor to a slew footing major. I was a holding minor, actually. And this is one of the hockey rules that I've never really gotten my head around.
What I heard was that it's when you sort of push a guy like or hit him and then you trap him by putting your leg around back of him. So you like push him backwards, but then you hold him in with your leg and he just falls over.
Yeah, so when you come up from behind and kind of like kick your leg to trip the guy while like kind of grabbing him from the top, that's my understanding, but it has to come from behind.
And that can really wrench a knee in a bad way, it seems. Yeah. Like, yeah, and that's why it's a 5-minute major.
Duke can hit his head the way he did, because he's like down holding his head. And they opened the door, and it was because of the break in the period, or in the middle of the period, when the shovelers come out. And I was like, oh, he's going straight to the locker room. Well, that's not good. But it was...
Do we think that Mel Pearson putting Mark Estapa in the box for a too many men penalty was on purpose? To fire up the Yost crowd. He's already taken a bunch of penalties. And Michigan takes a too many men minor. And it's like, oh, here's a stop. Like, and even though it wasn't his fault, like.
My guess is he's just never going to be a penalty killer, or at least not this year.
No, definitely not. I think that's a certainty. So Michigan gets Notre Dame this weekend in a 1-game semifinal on Saturday. Obviously, Notre Dame has been Michigan kryptonite this year. Although all those games have turned on very small margins, Michigan's been mistake prone, they're penalty prone, and Notre Dame stays out of the box So Michigan's power play is usually, and also their penalty kill is absurd. Their penalty kill is like 92%, which implies that if they were on a penalty kill for a whole game, they'd give up between 2 and 3 goals, which is mind-boggling to me. But
they did give up a couple this weekend because they played Wisconsin and it went to 3 games because they lost 3-1 on Friday and blew a 2-goal lead on Saturday and held on. And then Sunday, Wisconsin almost came back to tie it at the end again. So for whatever reason, Wisconsin has Notre Dame's number the way Notre Dame has Michigan's number, in some senses anyway.
So, I mean, obviously don't have your goalie wander out of the net on a power play and give away a free goal. Don't have a blatant interference call go uncalled and have Notre Dame score. But I mean, these are the kind of things that happen, right? You're in a 1-1 game against Notre Dame, and it's like, where does the puck bounce? I don't know if there's really anything else to say except hope Notre Dame isn't as locked in as they were at Yost, because Michigan got maybe one good chance that whole weekend.
Yeah, I mean, score first. That's what we always say. When you score first kind of matters. If you score first early, it only has so much effect. But I think the general rule is you want to be leading, or at least not trailing, at the halfway point of the game. Because once you get into the late second, into the third period, if you're trailing at that point, it really becomes tough sledding. And it becomes even harder to win the game in regulation, which doesn't matter as much for this weekend. So that's good. But yeah, make Notre Dame play your game. That was kind of the problem in South Bend, is Notre Dame was able to get Michigan to play the way they wanted to, really locking it down, you know, conceding shots to Michigan, but not very many high quality shots. So you want to score early and kind of dictate play and pull Notre Dame out of their comfort zone. And there should be all the motivation in the world to lose 4 games against these guys. So the players should be fired up. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, and one important note is that Michigan is currently 0.0017 RPI points behind Minnesota State for the first overall seed, which gets you the Atlantic Hockey matchup in the first round. Minnesota State has 1 game against Northern Michigan this weekend.
Who did beat them in the regular season.
Yeah, one of the few teams able to do that, but they are 26th in RPI. Notre Dame is 9th. So even if both teams win this game, there's some possibility that Michigan could end up passing Minnesota State. And then you probably have to follow that up by beating whoever in the Big Ten championship game. But there is still a possibility that Michigan gets the first overall seed, although Minnesota State has dropped like 1 game in the second half of the season.
Well, they will also have a tournament final too, right?
Yes.
Yes. Will. Probably against Tech, but could be against Bemidji. The pairwise matrix, probability matrix, the College Hockey News puts together, basically has a coin flip between Minnesota State and Michigan for number 1 overall. They've got Minnesota State at 51% and Michigan at 48%. And interestingly, both teams are basically locked in to those top 2 slots. The probability that Minnesota State falls below 2 is 2%, and for Michigan, it's 1%. So these are going to be your top 2 seeds, and it's a coin flip right now who gets which.
And the other semi is Minnesota-Penn State, yeah. Right?
Yeah, and Penn State went to Columbus and won 2. I think they won Saturday and Sunday.
Yes.
And that is extremely bad for Ohio State because they fell to 15th in pairwise.
Sad
so, so if they see any other team except the Atlantic Hockey team steal a bid, they're done.
They're at 34% to make the tournament now in the probability matrix, which is basically the chance that no automatic qualifier bid stealer happens. It's going to be pins and needles for them. There's a few teams that could bump them out. Clarkson winning the ECAC could bump them out. Omaha winning the NCHC, that seems kind of unlikely, but they could bump them out, or they could win a few games before losing in the finals to bump them out. And then I guess if Northern Michigan were to shock the world and beat Minnesota State and follow that up with winning the reborn CCHA automatic qualifier. So there's about 3-4 different possibilities to bump them out. In addition to the Hockey East kind of weirdness, there's a lot of teams on the bubble there. So uncomfortable 2 weeks now for Ohio State, where they've got to hope the favorites pull through.
I don't remember the last time the 15th spot in pairwise made the tournament, though.
Yeah, it's pretty rare.
I mean, usually we used to say like you get to 13, you're probably okay. 14 is like, eh.
Yeah, hockey's too much of a bounces sport. I mean, we just talked about it with Notre Dame, and like you're hoping that nobody upsets the tournament, like in the ECAG, or like, you know, like you said, like the Northern Michigan Wildcats go like Carr's alma mater. You know, they already have a win against Minnesota State, so like that could happen. Like if this is hockey.
Yeah, I mean, Ohio State went from 22-7-2 to maybe out of the tournament, which is, so they lost 6 of their last 7 games. They got swept by Minnesota and Michigan State to end the regular season. They were, you know, it's supposed to be Michigan's biggest hurdle for the conference championship, and then they lose to Penn State, who was pretty bad all year. So, and they also got to be looking back at a season opening loss at Bentley and being like, oh, gross. So,
well, not just that, but they didn't bother scheduling anybody decent in the non-con. I mean, that's their biggest problem. That was their biggest problem when they looked like they were going to make the tournament, is they played a really soft non-conference schedule. You know, Mercyhurst, Bowling Green, UConn, and Bentley. And in the process, they lost to both Mercyhurst and Bentley. So not just did they schedule a bunch of cupcakes, but they didn't even beat them. So they've only got themselves to blame.
So we're supposed to make like Bentley t-shirts or something now, right? Isn't that how that goes?
Maybe. I don't know. So prognosis seems pretty good for the next couple of weeks. Michigan's either going to be 1 or 2 overall seed. They'll get to stay nearby in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Hey, that's close, considering Loveland, Colorado is the other option.
Yeah, but Loveland, Colorado, you can go to, and then you can go to a regional game and then go skiing afterwards. So that's much more appealing than, this is kind of near Philadelphia, but not really.
Have you been to Colorado in March? It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So, but I've initiated a total boycott of NCAA regionals that aren't within reasonable driving distance of me. So,
and they're feeling it. Come on. Now they're down to 1 fan sitting in the studio instead of 2.
Yeah. Well,
hey, resale tickets should be cheap.
If people wish they could bet on me complaining about this every year, because they would win every year. All right, guys. Thanks for stopping by. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I'm Seth Fisher along with Brian Cook. You know who I feel bad for this year? The people who manufacture gold pants.